Welcome to episode 7 of the Ikivi podcast. In this episode, we speak with designer and founder of Iro Iro, Bhavya. Iro Iro started with the aim to reduce and reuse waste produced by their parent company, Shivam International, an organization that manufactures garments and exports them. And in the process of upcycling what they receive from the company, they utilize crafts that are indigenous to India and in turn providing fair employment opportunities. In this episode, we talk about waste, how Bhavya developed an aesthetic out of waste, and how she creates beautiful luxury products from it. We also talk about the stories of people who are part of the supply chain and how working for an ethical brand has impacted their lives. Bhavya is passionate, dedicated, and undeniably creative. We'd love for you to view their beautiful collection on Ikivi, linked in the description. But first, let's get into our fascinating conversation. Thank you so much, Bhavya, for joining us today. I'd love to hear, to start with, listening to your story, you know, what your inspiration was to begin the label, what your history is with the fashion industry and where it all began.
Thank you so much, Navi, for having me. So I grew up in a garment factory, in the sense that 15 years ago, my parents established a small garment factory in Jaipur. And I grew up exposed to how wasteful the system can be and how exploitative system can be. And it's really the system that is making the people making the people exploitative instead of the other way around. So also growing up, I do like, waste was basically my play-doh. So I'd like play with it the way kids would play with clay. And we'd like, me and my mom, we'd make these things. So like waste was always the material that I would go to do anything because it was just available in abundance. But then when I was in design school for 4 years, that's where I kind of came across the really seriousness of the problem and the scale of the problem as well, and how wide and how scary the problem is. The more you learn about the fashion industry, like the more I learned about the fashion industry, the more I wanted to run away from it, the more I wanted to be like, hey, can I do like communication design? Can I do something else? Because this is just too much. Like how is it that people are allowed to die just because they are making clothes? How is it that the quality of life is not of more importance than the quality of clothes that we wear? How is it that things are being sold at so cheap just because someone is in a position to pay the price for that cheap with their lives? So It was just one of those moments, one of those times where I kind of didn't know what to do about anything, how to react to anything. But I also felt a great sense of responsibility because I had the agency to do something. As I said, I had the background. And so I also listened to this one TED Talk by Ursula de Castro, and where she said that in developing countries, there are garment factories, and you know, the developed countries exported their cheap labor jobs to us, but they didn't export their ethics to us. And I was like, yes, that is right, because that's what I've grown up seeing. And then she said that she'd like to see upcycled collections coming out of these garment factories designed by them. And I was like, hey, listen, I can do that. So maybe, so without like even knowing me, I guess she created my job for me. So I ended up doing that. I ended up going to IIM Ahmedabad on a scholarship. And that really, like, after the design school, you need to equip yourself with business tools. Otherwise, in like as a creative, you're just like, hey, whatever I create, this is the best thing in the world that has ever existed. Like, it's like, it's just adding so much value. But in design school, in business school, you get to ask those critical questions as well, that who's going to buy this? Is this even needed? It is such a saturated market right now. What value am I adding? And all of that. So after graduating out of both of these schools, I started Eero. Eero is meant to be more of a circular design solution to the apparel manufacturing that was happening back home. Mm-hmm. So like how to make the system of apparel manufacturing circular. Then from it arose the opportunity to talk about Indian design and Indian aesthetics in a very unique way, because what we were doing is we were upcycling textile waste, but in the process of upcycling, we were using Indian indigenous crafts. And then in the process of making a product, we were using Indian indigenous knowledge of zero waste pattern cutting techniques so that no further waste is created. So mm-hmm. It became a very unique process to talk about Indian design and not when we speak about even fashion design, we generally speak about the Western design concepts and the Western patterns and the Western, because that's been the normative culture. But here we are getting to talk about Indian design and Indian processes and talking about them in a modern context instead of, you know, in a couture, Indian couture context. So that was really exciting. Through that, I was also getting an opportunity to challenge the normative culture in the way that what does Indian design really mean? How else can we utilize the techniques that have been developing in this nation in diversity? Like a lot of people from a lot of cultures have come to this country and contributed their own layer of innovation to one technique. So how can I take that forward and challenge what's in the normative culture? And then it really became also decolonization, because you're taking something that's your own and you're giving it, you know, you're really pushing the boundaries in it. Mm-hmm. And you're not relying on something, you're not subscribing to the Western values of a system. So all of that was very exciting to challenge the status quo and to challenge, to really make lowbrow art and challenge how highbrow art means. And that's where it all began.
Very exciting. And I think you touched upon so many aspects of this that I definitely want to get into. But my first question with regards to your story is, you know, as part of being a mindful business, which Eero is, we see that you have that very strong commitment to the people in the supply chain, the craftspeople that are actually making the products. Could you share with us some stories of the people in this supply chain and also how working with an ethical brand has impacted their lives?
Recently, I was just hanging out with the people I work with, the craftspeople in the village, and we were all just shooting a film. And so I was talking to Sajna Devi, and what she does is she segregates waste. So she doesn't come. So in our value chain, we have women who don't come from the background of traditional artisan skills, but they want to earn money. They want to have the opportunity to earn money. So what we've done is we have a process where we segregate waste, and we segregate it on the basis of color and weight and all of that, and then convert it into linear form so that it's ready to weave back again. That's all done by women in the village, and we've spoken to the local panchayat, and they've been allotted a space where like men are not allowed, so that they are very comfortable there. And what I've seen there is this sense of community growing, where like they could talk to each other about things they couldn't talk to each other in the presence of men. So that's been really amazing. So recently I was speaking to Sajna Devi, and she said that now she and she's sent her daughter to college, to Rajasthan University, and she told her daughter, "Shadi wadi karne ki koi zarurat nahi hai. Humne tumhare liye paisa ikhatta kar liya hai aur hum kaam kar kar paisa ikhatta kar rahe hain. Tumhe apni zindagi jaise jeeni hai waise." Basically that, you know, you don't need to focus on marriage. You do whatever you want to do in your life. I have collected money by working to give you that access in your life. So I don't want you to be trapped in a marriage like I am trapped in a marriage. And that was just so gratifying to hear. And I was like, yes.
So forward thinking.
Yeah. And I was like inspired on so many different levels. Even though it's urban India, it's progressive India, marriage and all of that shackles still exist around
exactly.
me. And to hear that from her in a world, like I also have lost my mother. So to just hear that from a mother, it's like, yes, I don't need to also submit myself to the shackles of the society.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really amazing to see that kind of seep into different parts of the country. But there are such amazing people really taking the stance, you know, and really making that change. Whereas we see people in our big cities who are so exposed, so educated.
I know.
But still making those.
I think it's all about the empowerment you feel within. Do you feel empowered within to make that choice for yourself and to make that choice for your, I guess, children? So I think at the end of the day, it's that. Because I would still see women who work with me, they'd be having fun and all of that. But when it comes to finances, they'll send their husbands to deal with me.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, that kind of empowerment has come from within. So that's just, and I feel like world happiness, they'll see each other, right? And mm-hmm. that is how empowerment will grow. So that was just gratifying to see. There was this another instance where I was talking to our master dyer. So he takes care of all the dyeing. And Hari Narayanji, and what we were trying to come up with was a textile that wouldn't be easily stained. So we were using a very indigenous polymer to do that instead of a synthetic polymer. And I was like, okay, what can we do? What can we do? And we did this, we did that, we did this. And he said ki main to zimmedari ke saath usko dye kar lunga, and weave jo karne wala hai usko zimmedari ke saath weave kar lega, aap usko zimmedari ke saath design kar bech doge, par lekin jo pehenne wala use karne wala uski kya zimmedari hai. I was like, yeah, I'm like trying to make a product that is not easily stained, but also people need to take care of their products so that they don't stain it as well.
Exactly.
So that was also like a mind opening moment, because we tend to, as a conscious business, we tend to take so much of it on ourselves that we need to make everything like it's made from waste, it's zero waste, it's being sold responsibly. We are not selling on any platform that is promoting, that is not conscious as well. Like Kiwi is a conscious platform, right? So we are trying to do our best. And even in the product innovation, we are trying to make products that don't get easily stained, that have longevity built in, that we are also trying to introduce a buyback program and all of that. But what is the responsibility of the people who are buying from us? So
yeah,
and that's coming from the artisan again that I'm working with. So it's just like, like, this is the kind of critical thinking that I need in my life.
Yeah. And it's amazing to have different people from different aspects and, you know, kind of talking about these things and creating awareness even within you, even though you are in the industry and are aware of it. It's so refreshing to hear these thoughts.
Absolutely.
And I think that there are so many layers to it, right? Like, there is the customer aspect of it, but there is the production aspect of it. And it kind of all has to align for things to be, for the industry to be better and for the industry to actually see improvement and changes.
Which is why, like, we need people from all spheres of life acting on climate crisis and acting in a way that's ethical. It cannot be just one hero. It cannot be just like us doing something in isolation. We need more upcyclists. We need more people with more solutions, which is why like working with collaboration is such a big thing for us.
Correct. So in terms of waste in general, we often talk of it from an environmental perspective, which there is. But I'd like to know a little bit more from your perspective in terms of the artistic and visual aspects of waste. And what do you feel when you look at waste? I know that you've had such your lifetime worth of experience with waste, with factory waste. So it's interesting to hear your perspective on it.
For me, really, it is where that word for me is very strong. Reclaiming something that's discarded or reclaiming something that's been termed discarded. I never believed that I was working with waste. For me, it was always something that's colorful, playful, short, short and like it's just so easy to deal with. Like, it isn't a whole fabric that you need to cut and then you need to kind of define. It's like coming together and then you can knot it and you can do a lot with it. It just has so much room to let you define how you play with it. So, and in terms of even the aesthetic, you can do something that's very rugged. You can do something that's very refined. So all of that, it gives you the, just textile waste, it gives me, at least, it gives me the room to kind of define my own state of mind. So if I'm making something rugged, it might be, go for a rug. It might go for upholstery. We did, by the way, end up developing that fabric that is resistant to stains. So now we are utilizing it as refined upholstery. And we also have a rugged upholstery. So so really for me, waste is something that gives me a lot of room to express myself.
Mm-hmm. You touched upon aesthetic a little bit. Do you have a unique specific aesthetic that you work with every collection? Especially, the reason why I'm asking is because with waste, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get and what you're going to be working with. But if you do have that specific aesthetic, how did you define it? And how do you kind of decide on what your aesthetic is?
That definition, I think, is it keeps on evolving. It isn't static. However, like, after many reflections, I do have, like, right now, how I'm defining the aesthetic is something that's hyper feminine, reclaiming the hyper feminine, because feminine is always seen as something that's vain, something that's not needed. And that's how waste is seen as well. So, again, reclaiming hyper feminine in an androgynous shape. So in all our shapes, you'll see that they are unisex shapes, but there are hyper feminine elements that are coming in. Really, like, somewhere there's a play with the lace, somewhere there's going to be the pocket is going to have a little detail, or if you like look, especially with the new collection in Interactions, if you open up the jacket and look inside, there's a colorful sari coming in, and like outside it's all just olive green. So so it's for me, it's really in those details that I get to reclaim what feminine is and what femininity is, but in shapes that I would wear personally, in shapes that I know my friends would wear personally. So that is an aesthetic we work with. And through that aesthetic, what we try to do is we try to tell a story of people that have inspired us. So for example, we did Moonwash, the collection, and Moonwash was all about celebrating women throughout history who were you know, tarnished in their times as women who were under the influence of the moon. They were called crazy for thinking the way they did. Hypatia, for example, or Noor Inayat Khan, or Kamala Devi Chattopadhyay, and all of these women thought outside of their box, existed in their own authenticity, and made the room for us to exist today. So it was a celebration for them. And in Interactions, we are celebrating women who really connected with their art form, and let kind of that art exist in authenticity. So Amrita Shergill, Toyin, Sarojini Naidu. And so in every collection, we are trying to celebrate people who have inspired us through this aesthetic.
Nice. And where does it begin? Like, what does your creative process begin with?
It begins with the need to tell a story. With Moonwash, it really began with, I was reading about Hypatia and how she was, and Joan of Arc, and all of these women, and how, like, there's this negative connotation around them, and there isn't, like, you would see their male counterparts and how they are celebrated today. So it just began from the need of celebrating them. And because they've given me the space to exist in my own authenticity. So, and also from the need of seeing them in an Eero-Eero. So what we did was we drew, like, say, Hypatia, and we drew her in Eero-Eero, and we drew Kamala Devi Chattopadhyay, and we drew her in Eero-Eero. Like, so it came from that, like, really crazy spaces, but, like, just wanting to celebrate these women. For Khabardar, it really came from, that is a collection we did on making dissent popular, and that came from reclaiming saffron, because saffron, especially in our country, for me, it's become something that I'm afraid of when I see on the streets, and I just didn't want to be afraid of saffron anymore. So it came from reclaiming saffron with all its diversity, with all its colors, with all its strength, and how it stands for courage. So after doing the collection Khabardar, I felt it. And through Khabardar, we celebrated journalists like Homai Vairawala, who's the first female photographer of India. And we celebrated Anama Matthew, who started the first female magazine, and we celebrated Himmat, who was the journalist, independent journalist team working during emergency. And we got to speak to Kalpana Sharma, who actually was the editor at Himmat. And she was just surprised that, oh, like, I never thought that I could inspire someone in fashion. I was like, ma'am, but that's the whole point.
Yeah. So how do you communicate these stories to your audience? Like, how do you get the name and the story out there for the brand?
We are still figuring all of that out, because this is Interactions. This is our third collection, third independent collection. We've done a lot of collaborative collections, but with independent collections, every time there's a different process. It's like a whole world And every time we are just going to a different part of this, we are visiting a different part of that world. So with Moonwash, mm-hmm. we are visiting this world and we are going to tell the story like how I think it should be told in that part of the world. And then in Khabardar, we are visiting this world of dissent and we are going to tell you, I feel like how the team feels the story should be told here. So how every part of the world has its own narrative craft. In our part of, in our world, every collection acts as a part of the world and has a way to communicate itself. So,
and I think it's so important to, I mean, I am a big believer in telling the stories of brands. And I think we spoke about this a few months ago when we got the brand on board, that it's so difficult to tell the story, but I feel so much more connected to the brand when I hear these stories. And I feel like it's more and more important now to tell the story of the brand. Do you have any advice for conscious brands that are just starting off in terms of, because everybody has a creative process and a story. How could they, you know, create that awareness and spread their message?
I think the only message I'll have is to stick to yourself. Like, don't try and be someone else for the sake of selling more or for the sake of fitting in or for the sake of anything. Especially in a creative industry, the only edge I have is that I am myself. That is the only strength I have here. So and that's how I react to anything, that there's this problem, how do I go around this? I react to it creatively, or I try and solve it in a creative process. But that's all very innate to me. So, mm-hmm. so we can be inspired by people. I'm inspired by so many people, as I already said, which is why all of these collections exist. But we can be inspired by people. But at the end of the day, it is what we are taking from these people and what we are, how we are adding those layers to our own stories. Mm-hmm. I think that's important, to keep on going back to what is it, how do I want to react to it?
Beautiful. Very, very nicely put. I'm going to pull us back a little bit. I know we were talking about marketing and generally, you know, communicating our stories, but just to pull back a little bit, because I think that this is an important aspect of it, which is basically the negative connotation attached to waste. A new product's value is considered to be so much higher, especially in the luxury sector, and waste somehow has this, you know, negative connotation attached to it. The frequent perceptions around it are that it is bad or it's dirty. But can designs made from waste come to have, a similar value to a new product, quote unquote? And what have your experiences been with this in your practice?
Yes, there is this huge negative connotation attached to waste. But I think with Eero, that has been something that we do as well, is challenge that negative connotation in the normative culture, that if it's made from waste, it's going to be cheap. If it's made from waste, it's not going to be made well. If it's made from waste, it's going to look rug-like, or it's not going to look as good. So something that we try and do is we keep on refining and refining and refining what we are making. I have faced that, like in I have pop-ups, and really our aim is that people should fall in love with the product, mm-hmm. and then they should fall in love with the story. Because if they like the story and they pick it up, oh, like this is made from waste, they might not end up wearing it. And it's just like creating more waste. So our aim is to make a product that really people can fall in love with. And then they hear the story and they're like, oh, wow, like it's also all of this. And then let me question how my other things are made. And so to really also, each product should also act as a tool for mass education and mass awareness. So, yeah.
I completely agree, because I think that once you, especially when we're trying to change the whole perception of what people think of fashion and how it's made, it's really difficult to change that perception. And to change that perception, what I find is such an important way to do it is to basically give them value and show them a beautiful product and say, and this is also so and so and so.
Exactly. So so that's what we do. And that's really worked out well for us, because I remember first pop-up we had, and that was during, that was 2018 and in January. And we sold out within a week of the pop-up. And then after 2 months, I got a mail from Singapore saying, listen, I bought a jacket from your pop-up and I've been wearing every day it in office because it gets so cold with the AC and I love it. And I also head this design firm here, and we have a manufacturing in India and we produce this waste, and could we collaborate? And that was really an eye-opening email, because I was like, I can replicate this solution for other brands. And like make the scope bigger. So that really was, then I started collaborating with hotels, brands, and other businesses to upcycle their waste and what they want to, what they could offer to their base, their customer base.
How do you interact with the global conscious fashion community? And what are some of the ways in which you think, you know, brands can get more involved so as to contribute to the larger picture of things, which is basically a more sustainable industry?
How we communicate is we, as I said, like we are authentic in our, even in what we are putting out on social media or anything else. We are not trying to add a layer of glaze over what's going on. We just put out, this is what we find interesting, or this is what we have done, or this is a person who's inspired us, and this is like, or this is someone's sari we have upcycled into a dress. And that is something I've realized, is that authentic communication gets to people. Mm-hmm. Because we've also been so small and so contained, people who have approached us till now have approached us with that sensibility that they already have these problems. Like these businesses also who we have collaborated with, they are conscious at the end of the day, and they've thought about, I am producing so much waste. What do I do with it? So we've really come to them as a solution instead of, you know, something. They also get to then talk to their customers as conscious customers then.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I've, you know, after having several of these conversations with really creative people, And from this answer that you just had, is authenticity. I know the word is used so much nowadays, but that's what I'm seeing that is in common across, you know, people like you, and the ability to just be your full authentic self online, and people just kind of find you, and people just kind of know who you are and what kind of work you do, and reach out to you for that.
I think that is something that's been very rewarding as well about this space, that in fashion, I have found a place to just be myself and keep on evolving on myself and keep on growing myself. And that's on a very personal level, that's been very rewarding.
Yeah. So we're really thrilled to see that you've been chosen as one of the 9 brands from all over the world to participate in the Fashion Open Studio in COP26, which is the UN climate change conference this year. Could you tell us more about it and how you'd be involved in it?
That was a really amazing thing that happened this year, because we just applied like everyone else, and then we got an email that we are in top 16, and we were like, yay, we are in top 16, but we'll not make it top 9. That is reward enough, validation enough. But then we got the mail that we made the top 9, so we were like, ah.
What was the criteria? And what was the application process?
We had to submit a proposal. So they were basically submit a proposal for a grant. Mm-hmm. So what would you do with that grant money? And how would you respond to the themes of this climate change, UN climate change conference, which was of resilience and community? So how mm-hmm. will your proposal respond to those themes? So what we did was as I mentioned, indigenous knowledge. So we work with zero waste patterns that are Indian, and we document in our practice. What we've found is we've documented a lot of these patterns. So what we proposed in this particular thing was that we take these patterns, we build and we zero waste patterns basically act as jigsaw puzzles, where like different parts are coming in to make a whole rectangle of a textile. Mm-hmm. So then I thought that maybe we can break that down and we can actually present it as a puzzle to people, so that indigenous knowledge is documented, it's packaged, and it's going out to people, and they are interacting with it. And the first thing that they are interacting it from is a sense of curiosity and a sense of playfulness, rather than a sense of guilt or a sense of, oh, I need to inform myself about this. So that was really exciting, that how can we make tools for education, but that are like really playful. Like people are not even going to, like, they're just going to build their jackets and they're going to be like, oh, like, this is how a zero waste pattern is actually made. So that was really exciting. So we designed 3 ways to do it, because different people would have different skill sets. So we developed a way of just buttoning up a jacket, so that people who don't have an access to a sewing machine or don't have the time to sew, they can just button up their jacket and they have a jacket that they've made. And that also involves this level of co-creation, where people are making their own thing. So mm-hmm. they would value it more. They are suddenly involved in the process of making it. And then we've also made a kit where it's a DIY kit where it's sew it yourself. Mm-hmm. So they get people who are into sewing and who do want to involve themselves into learning how to sew. So we are going to organize workshops around it where they can follow us like step by step in sewing of it. And then we have bats where both the process, 3 processes exist: button it yourself, knot it yourself, or sew it yourself.
So amazing. This is such a, it has so many levels to this particular concept and project and product, that I feel like it'll impact people in so many different ways, and I'm really, really looking forward to actually seeing it in person and actually probably doing it myself. As
I have one more thing to add.
With the
kit now we are doing is we are also developing a zine. Mm-hmm. And because with the kit you would get a manual to assemble the product, and we didn't want the manual to be just another manual, so we decided we wanted it to be something that people can keep in their libraries, something that they can treasure and value. So what we've done is we've called on people like Ursula De Castro and researchers like Amrita Neelkantham, Shivani Sharma, and all and speculative designers, and they are writing about, say, decolonized and indigenous futures, and they're writing about smaller business systems and why we need decentralized development. And it's all going to be printed using air pollutants, the zine, and it's going to be crafted using this ancient craft that's native to Jaipur, my hometown, Bahi Khata. So, so the zine is going to be coming with the kit.
Wow.
So that's also something people can look forward to.
So exciting. That's amazing that you've added this on as well. I think that's super creative and really exciting for the customer at the end of the day, to just read these stories and, you know, have so much more insight into this than anything else. Thank you, Bhavya, for joining us today and sharing your amazing stories with us. We're really looking forward to what Iroiro does with the brand and, you know, where you go with the brand. Really exciting.
Thank you so much, Navi, for having me. It was like a really amazing conversation.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikibi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikibi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikibi.